Centro Nazionale per gli Esami.
Maturità 2005.
Prova d'ascolto.
A tutti voi un cordiale saluto. Siamo all'inizio della prova d'ascolto dell'inglese.
La prova consiste di due parti, la parte A e la parte B. Ciascuna di esse presenta un testo base che ascolterete e gli esercizi ad essi collegati.
Prima leggerete gli esercizi, poi ascolterete il testo base e già durante l'ascolto potete dare la risposta. Ciascun testo base verrà proposto all'ascolto due volte e tra queste ci sarà una pausa per dare le risposte. L'inizio e la fine del testo parlato verranno segnalati dal seguente segnale acustico.
Scrivete nella prova d'esame, negli appositi spazi, usando la penna stilografica o la penna sfera. Se sbagliate, cancellate la risposta e riscrivetela. Le risposte illeggibili e le correzioni non chiare si valutano con 0 punti.
Dopo aver completato ambedue le parti, la parte A e la parte B, avrete a disposizione 1 minuto di tempo per annerire con la matita sul foglio per le risposte le relative caselle dell'esercizio A.
Abbiate fiducia in voi stessi e nelle vostre capacità. Buon lavoro!
Queste erano le istruzioni generali. Ora incomincerete a risolvere la prova d'esame.
Ascoltate con attenzione. Aprite il foglio d'esame.
Section A. You are going to hear a recording about problems with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD. As you listen to the recording, tick the appropriate column below and shade in the appropriate circles on your answer sheet. You will hear the recording twice. Now read through the statements.
Now, it's really quite common to hear of a boy being diagnosed with ADHD or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Indeed, it is the case that more boys suffer from it than do girls. But of the 5% of children under 16 in Britain who are thought to have it, a third are girls. But they're not always diagnosed, and so they don't get help. There's a world conference in Edinburgh this week about living with learning difficulties. One of the speakers will be Sveni Kopp. She's a child psychiatrist in Sweden, and she's conducted the first European study of girls with ADHD. Well, she joined us earlier from Gothenburg. Dr. Nikos Mitas is a consultant child and adolescent psychiatrist in North London. Katrina Walsh has an 11-year-old daughter, Willow, who has the condition. She came into our Plymouth studio, and I asked her what made her think something was wrong.
She was about 2 or 3. She was very, very, very active, and originally we put it down to being a very lively toddler, and that progressed and progressed, and eventually she really was far too much to handle.
What sort of things was she doing when she was too much to handle?
Climbing on shelves, swinging from light fittings, basically everything that a 3 or 4-year-old shouldn't be doing. Anything that was dangerous, she had a real fixation for, and it wasn't just a toddler intuition. It was much more than that. She was actually at one point quite dangerous to herself.
And how worried were you then at this stage?
I was extremely worried for Willow's safety, but I was actually also very, very worried that authorities would turn around and basically say, you know, that we'd hurt Willow or we'd done something to Willow. But obviously, you know, I was concerned that A, she was going to hurt herself very badly, and B, she's going to tar herself with a brush that is going to be very difficult for her to lose in later life.
So what did you do?
Originally, we did very, very little. Well, I was very fortunate to be granted an assisted place in a local private school. And she seemed to be doing very, very well to start with. Intellectually, she's very, very capable. But her behaviour was disintegrating before their eyes. And to be quite honest, we tried all the local remedies, the homeopathic remedies. And basically the school had come to a dead end and said, look, something has got to give. Basically, you know, we felt kind of backed into a situation, and Willow was then medicated with Ritalin. This is after an awful long battle to get her diagnosed.
How did you get your diagnosis?
I actually had to self-refer in the end. Willow's school had employed an independent child psychologist who had actually only spent a couple of hours with my daughter and assessed that although she was flighty, that there was nothing else actually wrong. The only continuation there was that we had to self-refer ourselves. Now, with the help of our health visitor, we were able to do that, but that still took an awful long time.
And how's life at home with her now?
Absolutely chaotic. Willow is very, very, very much to handle, and my mum and I both share responsibility of her during the school time. Basically, you know, she comes to our house for all of the holidays, every weekend and every Wednesday. So it's, you know, we kind of share Willow because she is too much for one person to handle.
Even though she is taking medication?
Even on medication, without medication, she is totally, totally uncontrollable.
Now you will hear the recording again.
Now, it's really quite common to hear of a boy being diagnosed with ADHD, or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Indeed, it is the case that more boys suffer from it than do girls. But of the 5% of children under 16 in Britain who are thought to have it, a third are girls. But they're not always diagnosed, and so they don't get help. There's a world conference in Edinburgh this week about living with learning difficulties. One of the speakers will be Sveni Kopp. She's a child psychiatrist in Sweden, and she's conducted the first European study of girls with ADHD. Well, she joined us earlier from Gothenburg. Dr. Nikos Mitas is a consultant child and adolescent psychiatrist in North London. Katrina Walsh has an 11-year-old daughter, Willow, who has the condition. She came into our Plymouth studio, and I asked her what made her think something was wrong.
She was about two or three. She was very, very, very active, and originally we put it down to being a very lively toddler, and that progressed and progressed, and eventually she really was far too much to handle.
What sort of things was she doing when she was too much to handle?
Climbing on shelves, swinging from light fittings, basically everything that a 3 or 4 year old shouldn't be doing. Anything that was dangerous, she had a real fixation for, and it wasn't just a toddler intuition. It was much more than that. She's, you know, she was actually at one point quite dangerous to herself.
And how worried were you then at this stage?
I was extremely worried for Willow's safety, but I was actually also very, very worried that authorities would turn around and basically say, you know, that we'd hurt Willow or we'd done something to Willow. But obviously, you know, I was concerned that A, she was going to hurt herself very badly, and B, she's going to tar herself with a brush that is going to be very difficult for her to lose in later life.
So what did you do?
Originally, we did very, very little. Willow was very fortunate to be granted an assisted place in a local private school. And she seemed to be doing very, very well to start with. Intellectually, she's very, very capable. But her behaviour was disintegrating before their eyes. And to be quite honest, we tried all the local remedies, the homeopathic remedies. And basically the school had come to a dead end and said, look, something has got to give. Basically, you know, we felt kind of backed into a situation, and Willow was then medicated with Ritalin. This is after an awful long battle to get her diagnosed.
How did you get your diagnosis?
I actually had to self-refer in the end. Willow's school had employed an independent child psychologist who had actually only spent a couple of hours with my daughter and assessed that although she was flighty, that there was nothing else actually wrong. The only continuation there was that we had to self-refer ourselves. Now, with the help of our health visitor, we were able to do that, but that still took an awful long time.
And how's life at home with her now?
Absolutely chaotic. Willow is very, very, very much to handle, and my mum and I both share responsibility of her during the school time. Basically, you know, she comes to our house for all of the holidays, every weekend and every Wednesday. So it's, you know, we kind of share Willow because she is too much for one person to handle.
Even though she is taking medication?
Even on medication, without medication, she is totally, totally uncontrollable.
This is the end of Section A.
Section B. You're going to hear a recording about the history of the American dollar. As you listen to the recording, write your answers in note form in the spaces below. You will hear the recording twice. Now read through the questions.
That's right, it's the American dollar, more of which have been produced than anything else anywhere ever. $7 trillion, that's an awful lot of noughts, are currently in existence, 14 billion of which are in paper bills. Unlike everyone else's currencies, whose appearance, names even, change seemingly with the seasons, the dollar has looked more or less the same for more than 70 years. And do you know why George Washington looks so grumpy on dollar bills? It's apparently because when he had his portrait painted, he just had a new pair of false teeth, and they were hurting. All this, you'll be fascinated to know, comes from a new book, Greenback, by Jason Goodwin. Outlook's Paddy Maguire spoke to him and found out more.
The dollar comes from Bohemia, from the modern Czech Republic. There was a place in the 16th century, in 1520s, called Joachimsthal, and the count who owned mining rights in that valley decided to produce from the silver mines there, because the whole area was a big silver mining district, a big coin. This large coin was very successful, and it was known from Joachimsthal as the Joachimsthaler. The Austrians and the Spaniards made it the model for their coin, and at that point it became known as the Reichsthaler, which in England was known as the Rixdollar.
And so began the story of one of the world's most powerful currencies, the almighty dollar. It was in 1690 in Boston that the Americans invented paper money for the Western world. By replacing hard currency, the silver dollar, with paper currency, the colonizers demonstrated their common purpose in building a community based on trust. They would take the paper version as a substitute for the real thing. Besides being a symbol of faith in their emerging nation, these continental dollars were issued to fund the fight against the British for American independence.
What was interesting about those dollars is that they were issued in 1775, and they really were the only symbol of a united America. You know, there was no flag, there was no Old Glory with stars and stripes, there was no president, July the 4th was a meaningless date, the Liberty Bell hadn't been rung. I mean, there was nothing there, really, to bring all these different colonies together in a symbolic, iconic way, except this continental dollar bill, which was the money.
Now you will hear the recording again.
That's right, it's the American dollar, more of which have been produced than anything else anywhere ever. $7 trillion, that's an awful lot of noughts, are currently in existence, 14 billion of which are in paper bills. Unlike everyone else's currencies, whose appearance, names even, change seemingly with the seasons, the dollar has looked more or less the same for more than 70 years. And do you know why George Washington looks so grumpy on dollar bills? It's apparently because when he had his portrait painted, he just had a new pair of false teeth, and they were hurting. All this, you'll be fascinated to know, comes from a new book, Greenback, by Jason Goodwin. Outlook's Paddy Maguire spoke to him and found out more.
The dollar comes from Bohemia, from the modern Czech Republic. There was a place in the 16th century, in 1520s, called Joachimsthal, and the count who owned mining rights in that valley decided to produce from the silver mines there, because the whole area was a big silver mining district, a big coin. This large coin was very successful, and it was known from Joachimsthal as the Joachimsthaler. The Austrians and the Spaniards made it the model for their coin, and at that point it became known as the Reichsthaler, which in England was known as the Rixdollar.
And so began the story of one of the world's most powerful currencies, the almighty dollar. It was in 1690 in Boston that the Americans invented paper money for the Western world. By replacing hard currency, the silver dollar, with paper currency, the colonizers demonstrated their common purpose in building a community based on trust. They would take the paper version as a substitute for the real thing. Besides being a symbol of faith in their emerging nation, these continental dollars were issued to fund the fight against the British for American independence.
What was interesting about those dollars is that they were issued in 1775, and they really were the only symbol of a united America. You know, there was no flag, there was no Old Glory with stars and stripes, there was no president, July the 4th was a meaningless date, the Liberty Bell hadn't been rung. I mean, there was nothing there, really, to bring all these different colonies together in a symbolic, iconic way, except this continental dollar bill, which was the money.
This is the end of section B.
Ora avete a disposizione un minuto per poter annerire con la matita, sul foglio per le risposte, le relative caselle, in corrispondenza del quesito A.
Siamo alla conclusione della prova d'ascolto dell'inglese. Smettete di scrivere, chiudete il foglio d'esame e posatelo unitamente al foglio per le risposte sull'orlo del banco.
Ancora un cordiale saluto.